Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, my partner in crime, he's Andy Asimakis. How you doing, buddy?
I feel great, dude.
This is an exciting show.
Since we've done this.
Together.
It feels like longer than weeks, though.
It kind of does, only, yeah. You're right.
It's been 2 weeks since we did an interview, and I feel rested. And ready to rock and roll. And this is like the best game.
Yeah, this is going to be dope.
To get us back in the groove.
This is going to be real dope. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us this week is Chris Burns and Greg Lane, developers of Hashtag Blood. That's right. I say the hashtag. I don't know if I'm supposed to. You'll tell me later. A delightfully zany animated dungeon crawler that blurs the line between action RPGs and hyperkinetic 90s cartoons. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. We have Chris in the flesh, as it were, and we have Greg on the line via satellite. How's it going?
There you go.
Good. We're doing great. Thanks for having us. We appreciate the opportunity.
This is going to be awesome.
Dumb.
Shut up. Very excited about this show, because this game, when we saw it for the first time, we were like, oh boy, this is going to be huge. This is going to be real, real big. And I want this right now in my hands. Ain't that right, Andy?
Yeah, I think this stole the Humble showcase. This was like the game that really made me like, put my phone down for a second and really pay attention to the actual show. I have never seen animation like this. This is the most gorgeous thing. I can't get over how amazing this looks.
Well, we really appreciate that. We're Exit 73 Studios started as a animation company, so
you don't say.
We dabble. It was a natural kind of fit to kind of hone a game IP into the animation realm, and that's what we were hoping to do. It wasn't always like that, though. When we wanted to make a game, we were not thinking really outside the box, and it's like, let's make a game look like a typical game. You know, we're playing around with pixel art, which I've done a little bit of, and stuff like that. And it wasn't until sort of like it dawned on us, it's like, why don't we just do it in a style we're comfortable in the style we want to do? And then, you know, kind of open our eyes to the idea that, yeah, why don't we do that? It'll be easier anyway.
Yeah. So, that's the keep it simple, stupid rule, right?
Yeah. It really is. It's like technology caught up to game making. You know, back in the 8-bit era, you couldn't do stuff like this, but if they could have, they would have, I feel like. And, you know, we didn't really think of it that way until we jumped into it that way. So,
yeah. Before we get into the deep dive, why don't you give everybody sort of the elevator pitch? What is Blood?
Well, it's a top-down adventure. It's kind of set in the Zelda, you know, we're definitely partake in the Zelda realm with a late 90s, early 2000s Cartoon Network kind of vibe, something we're, you know, growing up watching and participating in Zelda around that time. So that was sort of the idea to meld the two.
Awesome. Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the funny part about saying like the Cartoon Network, like late 90s, early 2000s vibe, is that every time we show the game to somebody else, they've got a different cartoon they compare it to. So there's some people that are like, oh, it's Powerpuff Girls. Oh, it's My Life as a Teenage Robot. Oh, it's Wayside, or it's whatever. Like, it really is reflective of whatever that person watched as a kid. And I think we've really hit that note. Chris and Bob particularly hit that note really, really well.
Yeah,
I was gonna say Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah, Dexter's Lab is the one that comes.
We're very Gendy influenced. You know, we never hid the fact that, you know, Gendy is one of our biggest animation influences as a studio, as an animation studio. You know, I think the guy's a genius. He'll go down in the history books of animation for sure. So we are super influenced by his storytelling, his design, and just his kind of artistic nature.
I remember when that whole thing started, like, you know, I was a kid and Cartoon Network was known for the oldies. Like, that's what it was. It was classic cartoons. And then they had this thing called it was a contest, I think it was called Cartoon Contest or something like that.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And it was, they were going to show, they had a bunch of studios or artists submit show ideas or whatever, like these tiny little pilots. Yep. And then they would show them, and then the audience or whoever, I don't know exactly how it went, because I was, I don't know, this was probably what, 95-ish? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was pretty young. I was, you know, barely 8-9 years old, whatever, however math works. And but I remember, like, when the winners were picked and you had this whole new, it was a brand new direction for the Cartoon Network, where this sort of style, this new content, this original content of the Dexter's Lab, Cow and Chicken, you know, Powerpuff Girls, Johnny Bravo, like, I think those were the four original winners.
Yep.
And then and then it kept blowing up from there. You got Courage the Cowardly Dog, and like, you got all those awesome shows, and it sort of influenced what was going on other networks as well, like the Disney Channel, and or I think it was just the Disney Channel at that time, but and of course Nicktoons, like Nicktoons was big, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, they want like long forms. They're okay with some longer form storytelling, and like, it kind of changed the way
character development.
Yeah, it kind of changed all of that. Yeah, it really did. And then seeing this trailer on the Humble Showcase, you're like, oh, you could do this in games too. I remember. Yeah, that's something that would be awesome. Why don't we do that a lot more? It gave me the vibes of Cult of the Lamb too. Like Cult of the Lamb kind of harkened back to those cartoon, that late 90s, early 2000s cartoon era as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like sort of simple design, but animated, you know, not over animated, but like a lot of hand drawn elements for sure.
Yeah.
There's something. You know what I get when I see this?
What do you get?
And I'm curious if this has been mentioned before to you guys. For some reason I get Battletoads with the attack animation specifically.
Oh, how yeah.
Everything is just enlarged, over exaggerated, and it's just about like a punch is like this giant fist that's like five times the main character's size, and it's so comical. I get that feeling, and it's such a 90s thing too.
Absolutely. Yeah, that vibe. We kind of quote like always bounce back and say Zelda and stuff, but there was a lot of stuff happening in the late 90s and video games that we hearkened back to, and yeah, cartoons, you can draw whatever you want. I've always sort of stuck to that theory that it doesn't have to be on model. If it looks funny, it probably will be funny, and why not exploit that in a video game aspect. We certainly would in a animated short, so I don't see that difference with it being interactive, why people wouldn't enjoy that. So that's what we sort of did. And it, of course, like Battletoads, yeah, the big foot when you use the boot and stuff. I actually, did a few of those too for the protagonist to have like different footwear in each direction when she kicks. You know, it being a top-down adventure, we had the cardinal directions, up, down, left, right. And we also did diagonals. So we thought it'd be funny for each angle to have sort of a different take on what we call the finishers, which kill the enemy.
I'm watching the trailer right now, so it's playing for our viewers, our audio listeners. You know, head over to youtube.com/dualscreens.tv. I just noticed that for the first time, that every direction had a different little kill animation with like spiked boots, a stiletto heel, like that's awesome.
We have 25 finishers in total with each angle. Oh, so not which, sorry, 25 total, not each 25 angle,
across
five.
Yeah,
there's five or six in each angle, so and yeah, I mean, when you see the game, you get different kind of weapons and tools that will influence the finishers in that case. So
I was gonna ask, you know, you mentioned the Zelda influence here. Mm-hmm. What is the moment to moment here? What's the moment to moment gameplay for players to experience? Is it a, you know, overworld kind of thing where you're looking to get the next item and, you know, delve into the next sort of castle or dungeon or something like that? Like, what's your overall level design and gameplay design?
It's really narrative. We're trying to make it feel like you dived into a cartoon or an episode of a cartoon. So each kind of chapter, or we call them chapters or episodes, will kind of influence. And they're usually based around some sort of dungeon-ish kind of thing, though. Okay. This takes place not in medieval times. It's a small town called Carpentersville, and you get to know the town and different buildings in that town, and that will sort of influence where you go. And it's framed out like a dungeon would be, but in kind of modern times.
Gotcha.
So, you know, there
is that a John Carpenter reference?
Yes. Yeah, we're Carpentersville. Yeah,
so good.
There's going to be a big list of all the references and everything, so it's almost going to be a scavenger hunt to find all of everything we're citing.
Yeah, we're not.
Oh, I love it.
We never shied away from saying like we're referencing this. In a lot of the ways, like I kind of look at, like, you know, Stranger Things, it's clear what they're referencing, and they're paying homage to it, and I think that's sweet. And it's like we're paying homage to the things that influenced us as artists and video game makers. So we're never calling ourselves unique in any regard. We're just like, this is because we like John Carpenter. This is a love letter to Zelda and Battletoads. And that's how we always kind of framed it. And when you lean into it, you know, you can influence it in different ways. And it's a lot of fun that way.
What's happening in Carpenterville? Can you give us like a little rundown of the scenario, the story a little bit? What set us up?
Sure. Why don't you
have this one, Greg? Becky and her dad, Becky and her family, I should say. Becky and her family recently moved into town because dad got a new job with this big tech company. And so he's going to go work for this tech company. Becky is starting high school all at the same time. So she's got to go through a lot of life changes. And she's got this cookbook. And she takes the cookbook, and it's in French. And so she goes to like translate some of the books. It turns out, surprise, it's not entirely a cookbook. And that sort of unfurls our vampire escapades as we get pulled more into like what's happening in the dark underworld of this seemingly normal average town. And sort of every time she goes into like one of these new buildings, there's dungeons there. So there's like a dungeon in the back rooms of the mini mart. There's a dungeon in the basement of the school. And I'm sure every middle schooler would certainly believe that.
100%.
Like the mall or the hospital so all these places sort of like turn into these labyrinth-like buildings where she goes through and sort of unravels not only the mystery of her book, but of all the moving parts that are happening in this brand new town that she and her family just moved to.
That's awesome.
Did she find the Necronomicon?
Probably.
Is that what happened?
Necronomicon, yes.
Necronomicon. You know, I love that.
Looking at this thing, this could have easily been like an Adult Swim cartoon. What made you guys decide to take this idea with all your animation talent, make a game? Why go that route?
It started off as an idea to go to series, and it got denied, and we're like,
oh, really?
All those stupid bastards. Those stupid, stupid bastards.
We've pitched about 12 times, and we're
oh, man. On
it, so it's not exactly, you know, not a story unheard of in animation.
Guess what? It'll get picked up now.
well, everything we've done as
that would be great.
Every short we made, every kind of little IP we have, they've ultimately been denied in its elevator pitch or the one sheet or whatever you kind of send your way, and we end up making it like a 3-minute short or 7-minute short, or in this case a 10-hour game, and then it drums up interest, and then people will occasionally buy it, and it's always after we make it people seem to want a little more of it. So it wasn't alien to us. It's like, we like this idea. We know video game programmers. It would actually make probably a better video game in theory, because you're fighting vampires, than just a story. So why not make it interactive? So yeah, it started as a pitch when we were working with on a different IP with Disney. We gave them first look, and they weren't interested. So Yeah. We made it a game.
Because of all the blood.
That's like turning
the lens. No, I wasn't shocked that they turned it down. And, you know, I've been with pitching and animation, I'm sure in video games too, which just, it's every 100 pitches, you might get one thing people are interested in.
So
you get pitched all the time, you know.
We've interviewed developers who have pitched the game that they're on to talk about.
Sure.
They've pitched that game to dozens of publishers and wind up either self-publishing, going to Kickstarter, or they finally get a break after 6 years of developing the game and like iterating and making changes and all that stuff. Going into like you have experience in that, obviously, with like you just said, with the animation side, but how does it differ from, how does the gaming pitching and all that stuff differ from your straight up animation pitches?
In general, I found the indie game scene a lot more welcoming than the animation scene.
In what way?
A lot more support, like from people that were making games. You know, it's hard, like if you're making an animated short, say, and you want to get interest in it, the only thing you can show is the animation itself, which is the end byproduct.
Okay.
Video games, we had the opportunity to come up with a demo, put it in front of people, adjust the demo, and people aren't losing interest in it because it's more than the byproduct of just the animation and the gameplay. It's kind of,
right,
you know, the addition of both. And then we get in front of all these really great indie developers that are doing the same thing, you know, on their own dime, hitting the road, showing you on these showcases and stuff. And it just, you're kind of welcomed into like that brotherhood of like, hey, we're all trying to make something. We're all doing it. It's not something that's paying us right now. And you find a lot of people who are equally passionate about making something. So in that regard, it's a lot more welcoming, where in animation, you kind of, you know, you're not showing everything, and then people are kind of in their own sectors and stuff, and then it's a whole different kind of feel. So I gravitated right to the indie game scene because of the support and because of the creativity and because of all the people that were, you know, just giving us tips. And you know I mentioned earlier the another person you interviewed, Xander, you know, it's like I met him because of the indie game scene, not because of the animation scene. So it was something I gravitated really early on to, and since then. So yeah, so with your question, I didn't really answer it there, but it was sort of easier to start developing this because we knew what we kind of wanted to make. We knew we had this kind of cartoon thing going on, so it was just like, let's focus on the visuals and the gameplay, and then we'll get to some conventions and see if we drum up any interest. And you know, sure enough, we kept doing that until people and publishers were reaching out to us and saying, why are you guys interested in that? And you know, until we found our home at Humble Bundle Games. So it was kind of not landed in our lap, but it was 2.5 years of hard work, which ended in a partnership.
What was
I mean, having a hashtag in the game's name also really helped a lot.
Yes.
Hell yeah, it does.
And you know, when we came up with the pitch, it was always called hashtag blood, and it was just, you know, it was I forget when we even made that pitch. It was like 2016 or 15. And we weren't even on Twitter yet, our company. So we just thought it was something like a teenager would call the self, and it just, you know, I'm glad we kept it. So
Mark's like a marketing genius move right there. It's like, I got this.
Completely, yeah, no, serendipity. We're not that smart.
So what was the can you give us a couple of deciding, I don't want to say deciding factor, but that's kind of what I'm getting to, to signing up with Humble?
Well, we were all working full time elsewhere. You know, we're called Exit 73 Games, but the studio side of it was a different company, and we were doing stuff for Nickelodeon and just sort of kind of run of the mill animation stuff. Greg was working over at Unity. The two programmers were working elsewhere at different just programming companies. And, you know, we're kind of middle-aged men and we had comfortable lives with mortgages and all of us had kids and, you know, a lot of responsibility. So taking on this new endeavor was really kind of a pretty big risk. But Humble reached out and they were like, we really like what we see here. What could you kind of come up with a pitch? We did, and they've been just so supportive of this, you know, and they understood that it's like we have these other careers that we're kind of leaving behind to make it, and they really supported us and supported all our decision making and with us with the resources necessary to kind of take that risk. And as anyone knows in the creative field, you know, that risk is the scariest part sometimes, especially when you're comfortable with other parts of your career and life. So,
right.
You know, we're not 20 and we all have a lot of responsibilities now. So it was, what happens if this game doesn't work? Like, are we going to lose our mortgage? You know, yeah. So it's scary, but they, like I said, they've been great. So it was just an easy decision from there.
There's no reality that exists where this does not work. I am looking at it.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are very confident. You know, when you're making something, you're just constantly filled with self-doubt. You know, it's like, are we making this for the right audience? Or is this gonna work? You know, that's the scary part too, sure. You know, putting yourself out there. But everyone,
when you guys first like showed this off, like what was the reception like? Because I'm sure this is your first foray into gaming.
Yes.
You had this trailer at the Humble game show, a lot of eyeballs on it. What's the response been like on your end?
When we first started showing it at conventions, it was very similar to what we were hoping for. It's like, oh, I get what you're making here. It looks like a cartoon. Right. It feels like a cartoon. So it's like, okay, that's, you know, we set out to do something. And that feels like a success that it's translating to this cartoon world. And the Humble showcase was great. We got a lot of views on it, a lot of, you know, and as anyone who works and with the internet, you know, it can be a little cruel sometimes, and we didn't get any really negative responses, or the ones that were, we kind of brushed off. And so it seemed like it might have an audience that we hope to, you know, satisfy when they play the game. So
I think we're going to be lucky to get a wide swath of audience as well. Andrew and I took the game to Washington, D.C. to a convention called AwesomeCon pre-pandemic. And we got really positive reception. But one of the players that really stood out to me was this 9-year-old little girl who came back and played it every day of the 3 days that we were there at the con. She came back and she played it basically to completion for the demo that we had. And at first I was a little concerned because I was like, there's some kind of horrific visuals. So I hope you're ready, 9-year-old little girl. But it worked and it clicked for her. So if it clicked for her and it's going to click for, you know, guys our age, it's going to, I think we're going to hopefully find our audience.
It's not that horrifying though. Yeah,
it's,
the imagery.
It's got whimsical like, horror.
Yeah. It's like cartoony violence. Yeah.
In that build, there was a principal who was essentially ripped apart from the inside. Yeah.
Well, that's any young girl's fantasy.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Listen, my 7-year-old son, he's always making horrifying monsters with Play-Doh, like just horrifying creatures. And I'm like, good Lord. It's like, yeah, and this one, the teeth and the tongue and it rips out the brain from the, and I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. All right. I got to watch myself when I sleep. I got to lock my door, essentially, is what I have to do.
I think better that he's drawing them and imagining them than being scared of them. Like being
no, 100%. Like he is.
That is good.
He loves that stuff. And I think it has a lot to do with seeing the creative process behind it. He watches a lot of how-to videos, like a lot of creative stuff like that. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And kids these days have way more horrifying things at their fingertip than hashtag blood. Like just way more horrifying. Yeah,
you're right about that. That's true. So I mean, when you put it that way, it makes sense.
Desensitization. Wow.
Yep. You almost got it.
I think that was it.
I know what you mean.
I think I did it the second time. I got it the second time. It's a real thing.
Sure.
How has your approach to animation changed now that going from more of a traditional cartoon format to a game? Because you guys have, I saw on your Twitter feed, over 120,000 animations in this game, which sounds staggering. But when you look at the gameplay, it's, I see it. There's so many frames, so much detail. How has that changed for you guys, the mindset and the approach to animation?
Well, you have to approach it. It is different. I'm glad that's a very good question, because you have to approach the protagonist animation, at least. It's like, how would a player, you know, play this? It's different. It's like, what if they move left instead of right? So it's not just animating. Like when you have a scene, it's just like you control that player. Now we're giving, you know, credence to the player itself to move her the way she sees fit. So, you know, you have to approach those like transitional animations as if the player would do something that would be unorthodox. So that's always in my mind. So there's a lot of kind of rules we kind of approach with the animation. It's like the animation has to be so broad that it still looks smooth no matter what the player does. So a lot of the kind of ease in and ease outs of animation, we had to kind of flip on its head, and so it doesn't feel so jarring or you know, looks like it pops. So there is those kind of things, but just from the interactive side of things. Now there are cutaways in the game, which are just animated shorts, and that we approach the same way we would approach any animated short. We storyboard it out, and then we just go from there. So it's that's a little easier. I'm a little more familiar with that side of things.
Yeah. I was gonna say, with some of the gameplay pieces though, you've helped yourself out a little bit. There's holes that Becky can fall in, and you've decided like, oh, she can't fall in diagonally. She's only gonna fall in from the
corner. Oh yeah, yeah.
Or when you step on the spikes, she can only step on from one or two directions, right?
So only left and right, because yeah. And some villains too. It's like when you look at top-down games.
Oh, that Banshee, yeah.
You're looking at you're seeing things from like, you know, when a character jumps towards you, say, and it's facing the camera and the protagonist is facing the camera, my animation mind is like, well, they would be facing each other if they're fighting. But, you know, in games, it feels a little different.
Right.
Like, there is some leeway in terms of like, well, I don't have to do every angle of every character. And all the NPCs are kind of facing forward no matter how you talk to them and stuff. So there are like cheats, but it's an ensemble cast of about 70 to 80 characters with the NPCs. So you can get to that 120,000 mark pretty quick when you have made all those. And I should say that's not just animation, that's sprite work. So like if there's a background element, that will count as a drawing.
Right.
Stuff. So it's not pure character animation, that 120,000.
When it seems like animation itself, like traditional animation in the digital era, has kind of lends itself a little bit more to the to that transition to gaming, because when you look at cartoons being made now, you have artists that are specific to drawing one character, and then they do all the animations for a scene, and then you could just like drag it and put it in a scene, and the background artist makes the background, and then this guy's making this character in this scene, and you know, all that stuff, and it's very similar to gaming where you're kind of you're making each element individually, animating it individually based on a bunch of a bunch of permutations and parameters, and then kind of dragging and dropping. So did you find that transition to be like a pleasant surprise, like being able to kind of like do it that way instead of having to worry about learning, you know, from scratch kind of thing?
Yeah, there is a ton of parallels from creating animation itself to lending it to a game. But we rely so heavily on each other's like kind of niche fields that, you know, I don't even open Unity. I'm the least technical person on the team, but absolutely. So I just have to focus on the animation. And I approach it in the way I would approach kind of any animation. I know what I need to do a day and get it done. Same with the programmer, same with Greg, the writer, and then the other animator who's not here, Bob Fox. He kind of wears a lot more hats. He'll get it into Unity and all that stuff. So, but like any creative production, I imagine live action probably has a little similarities too. Like you start with an idea and it's like getting to the post, like where it's on television, you know, takes a lot of different routes, and but it always starts with just sort of like an idea, and then how do you execute? So that's how we kind of approach the animation for the game too.
I have a question for Greg, more of a writing story perspective. Who is Becky? Where did she come from? I mean, you guys both dads. I'm not sure if you have daughters or whatnot.
I was gonna say, when a mom and a dad love each other very much.
Stop. but you know, she has like very shades of a final girl energy in her. The field hockey is a part of her personality too. So I wonder, where do all those components come from to create Becky?
So I was handed a lot of Becky. Chris and Bob did that initial pitch. It was a 1 minute video. And I think she was a cheerleader in the first pitch video. And then in your pitch deck, she was changed to a field hockey player. So some of that stuff, I was granted. I've only got boys. So I don't have a daughter.
You made the ideal woman then in this character.
She's tough. I love her. She's tough when she needs to be tough, and she's cute when she needs to be cute. I think just like a lot of us perceive ourselves to be, right? We're tough when we need to be tough, and we're soft and considerate when we need to be soft and considerate. So those are the principles of trying to work with Becky.
But where did Christofferson come from? Is that Chris? Did you put Chris in this game?
No, it's a Blade reference. You know, Chris Christofferson sort of.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was like, I was looking at his face. It looks like Chris a little bit. With the action.
No. Well, I started for production and I didn't have a gray beard. And I was a little more svelte. No, I'm slowly turning into him. By the end, I'll be him. again, it's anyone who's willing to look into any sort of vampire reference, you could kind of maybe make a clear path of what we're trying to reference. And Chris Christofferson and Blade was sort of like
right.
a bit of a mentor. And I was like, you know, let's just call him that.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's right. Yeah. And I'm getting like Buffy vibes too now. God, this
sure,
is just
that, well,
the most 90s thing.
Well, when it's we incredible. Made it a cheerleader, I was like, this is way too on the nose.
Field hockey was a good choice.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's obscure enough, but it's relatable. Like you whack something with a stick. Like that's, yeah. Anyone could do that.
And we kind of needed like this master sword kind of weapon for like, if we're kind of referencing Zelda needing his best weapon, where like this ties into school and it looks like a weapon and it can certainly be used as one. So it was kind of a natural feel. I was like, that's the one.
What kind of like Zelda like upgrades can we expect Becky to come across throughout her vampire slaying journey?
We've got bombs. We don't have arrows, but she's got throwing pencils. We're trying to like keep all the parallels very, very similar to whatever other parallels are for like a modern, to give the game a modern feel. She's got a cell phone, and the cell phone tracks and handles her like inventory. It handles her social media. There's collections, so that's handled partly through the phone and partly through other stuff. The finishers that we referenced earlier, those are all things that she'll sort of get as upgrades over time. There's a big punch finisher. There's the field hockey stick finisher. And then as she gets upgrades to her field hockey stick, if she gets a shovel or a shield or whatever, then there are related finishers for those kind of things too.
Do those finishers have a mechanical difference, or is it just a visual difference? Like, do they do different types of damage, or like one, you know what I mean?
Increased range. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. They've got a wider footprint, hits more enemies if they're clustered together and stuff like that.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yep.
Cool.
Guys, I know you're eyeing a 2024 release date, but I've been so hooked on Tears of the Kingdom. I need to get off Zelda, and this is just Zelda enough to make that transition easy and painless for me. So if you can like get this to us like a little bit sooner than next year.
Let's figure this out. All right, guys. Yeah, what do we need?
Let's just put it this way. I'm glad 2024 is like, it's a broad enough number because we have a lot of production left, and you know, we want to make it as flush as we can. and as seamless as we can. And every day we're adding a little more like gameplay to it and more dungeon-esque kind of stuff.
Sure.
So, you know, we have a lot done, but still a lot left to do.
You know, I actually, that's a really good conversation to have, because you don't really have the experience in knowing what parts of game need to be in your game, right? Yeah. Like learning all of that on the fly must be quite a challenge. Or like, I'm, you know, you mentioned you do have other team members, you have programmers, you have people that are experienced in it, but how do you, as the person bringing this IP and going from animation to gaming, reconcile those gameplay choices?
I mean, everything's been super organic. You know, we start this and we have this mountain of work to do, and we're just like, well, what can you get done in a day? And then those influence our choices organically. And it's like, we started with the town of Carpentersville, and it's like, what could be in this town? So we kind of like an everyday Americana kind of town, and we're like, okay, now let's make the decisions on where we go from there and stuff. So it was like this organic thing. We didn't start with like this master kind of like plan to be like, well, this is going to happen here, you know. So we it all kind of happened organically, and we make like kind of narrative decisions almost like even yesterday, Greg, when we were talking about one of the things, we're like, what if we did this? And then we're like, yeah, let's do that. So it's just kind of happening organically as we go on. And if we look, you know, it's kind of important to almost work myopic in this scenario, because if we stood back and we're like, okay, we have a year and a half to do this, we would run for the hills, because oh, get that finished. But now, you know, we're in the middle of it and now it's coming together. So, you know, in a lot of ways, the being kind of a rookie to that kind of storytelling has helped us, I feel like, because
sure,
I don't think anyone in the right mind would have been like, let's make a 200,000 drawing, you know, 6-hour game. And now, you know, we have way more gameplay. So it's
was there anything that like the more experienced game makers brought to you and said, hey, players are going to need to be able to do X? And you were like, oh, you know, yeah, like, oh, yeah. Anything where of you're course. Just like, oh yeah, like, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. They would need to be able to do like, so I remember a friend of mine when he was making a game, just completely forgot a pause menu. Just like, was
oh,
like,
God, yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I need to make all of the animation, all of the art screen. I need to make all of the art for just when somebody needs to pause the game. Like, was anything like that just like shown to you? You're like, holy shit. Yeah, you're right. Like,
it's those little things for sure. That, and they're not little. They just feel little because
right.
You pause and you get a menu, and any average gamer would be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, of course. When we're like, well, there's a part in the game where you don't have the cell phone yet, and you can still need to pause. So we needed like two kind of pause
oh.
and stop. And there's you know, then there's all the like the quandaries of like, well, she doesn't have this item yet, how will she use it here and all that stuff. So yeah, there is just a ton of that you didn't even think, like the UI, the like just doing something not as inane because it's super important, but it's like you don't think about that. It's like what's her life bar gonna look like, how will this, so all the stuff that, you know, goes into game making, you know, glazed over us real early on. And then we're like, oh yeah, we do need to create that. But we're, you know, every week we're creating more art. So, you know, when the programmers say they need something, you know, we jump and do that. And that's sort of how it's been working so far, you know.
That life bar is a good call out, because we've tried to blend the video game and the cartoon experience as much as we can. We want players to get caught in the moment, to be like, am I actually watching a cartoon? Am I actually playing a video game? But ultimately, it doesn't matter. We just want you to sort of experience the whole thing together. But bringing that back to life bars, we've got a number of boss fights, and we went back and forth of like, do we have a life bar on the bosses? Do we, you know, do we have that game element, or do we not? Do you just like show it with how much they flash like red and yellow, or things like that? So that's something we iterated on and worked on a little bit. And then all the HUD elements, all the buttons to like determine like what attachment does Becky have for her field hockey stick? Like, how do we show that she's carrying pencils or bombs, or how do we show that when she gets new pickups, when she gets new missions started, and that kind of stuff. Because again, keeping it feeling like a video game, feeling like a cartoon, and finding that middle ground has been important the whole time.
Speaking of boss fights, I'm looking at that giant mutating rat. It's just so, it's such a Carpenter, like, body horror thing about that I find so appealing.
Yeah, there is a, you know, there's a turning point in the game where it's like, we're in essentially this kind of cutesy town and everything's very bubbly and, you know, kind of lighthearted. And there's a turning point where just like the seemingly innocuous kind of area can turn frightening. And from there, you kind of, you know, it knocks the player back a little bit, like not what to expect next, and like kind of disarm them when it is cute again. So we always wanted to make it cute and then horrific at certain points. And then, you know, and then you don't want too horrific. And, you know, Greg has influenced so much like humor into the game, and it was something I wasn't even really thinking about, like the humor element. And it, you know, it's a cartoon, which is silly to kind of not even think about that, but I was like, oh, this is feeling really balanced now. It's like there's these really funny kind of poignant moments, and then there's things where like, oh, holy crap, what's happening kind of thing. So, you know, we're trying to strike that balance.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Happy Tree Friends. You know, there's that balance of the cute and just utterly like horrifying, but like they both go so well together where it just makes sense.
Yeah, it's like salty and sweet, you know.
Happy Tree Friends had some moments where it crossed the line, Andy.
Yeah, they're sure. You know, that's true. And
like yanking an eyeball out of somebody's head.
Yeah, we never really
wrapping it around a tree, and yeah, just I don't know about that.
I classic. I was a lead animator back in my Adult Swim days on this show called Super Jail.
Oh God, Super Jail was.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was the first season. I was a writer and lead animator.
Holy shit.
Okay, since you have a little bit more, you have some inside info into the Adult Swim culture here. How high is everyone? Because I can't, like, good Christ almighty, what is happening some of these shows? You're just like, okay.
I was working for a different animation studio at the time where I really cut my teeth on, because we did a lot of like the Comedy Central stuff. It was this company in Brooklyn called Augenblick Studios. It was a real tight-knit group of people. Okay. Yeah, they've done like The Americans. We did Wonder Shows, and we did a bunch of like old school stuff. And not so much high, but we were partiers. We every Wednesday we'd hit the bar, and you know, everyone would show up Thursday looking a little groggy. And Super Jail is no exception. We wrote the first season in 10 days. We're like, let's just do an episode a day. And the first season of Super Jail, not a ton of dialogue, so we're just like, how do we get to the fight at the end? And they're like, what if we got a cult leader coming, you know, stuff like that. So not high, but definitely not lucid either.
there is something going on with those adult style cartoons it's a special place in my heart, man. That Aqua Teen Hunger Force era of Adult Swim.
Yeah, I can't speak to what they do in their private life, but I know for Super Jail, I can say we were a lot younger, and you know, we could stay out a lot later. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
who do I have to yell at Adult Swim for canceling the Venture Brothers?
Oh, that's where I got.
I need names
too. 2003, I worked on that. Well, there's the creator of Adult Swim, Laszlo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Good luck reaching out to him.
Send a sternly worded letter.
Yeah. No.
Listen, you bastard.
I know. I've worked with the creator of Venture Brothers, and I think after he's worked on that for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which one, Doc Hammer?
Knowing him very personally, I would guess that he probably wanted to have its swan song. Yeah. So like I, yeah, not knowing it.
That show was dope. The show was ridiculous.
Well, they got that movie coming out.
Yeah, dude, yeah, right. I wasn't sure if that came out.
It was great. That's actually my first paying job was Venture Brothers, the pilot, though, which was...
Holy shit.
2000.
We have animation royalty on the show right now.
We really do.
Not maybe in title only.
I'm getting a little hashtag chub right now.
You mentioned Brooklyn. Are you still in New York?
We're in Eastern Long Island now.
Oh, okay.
Where we kind of have home. But yeah, my business partner for the animation side, we both went to School of Visual Arts in Manhattan.
Oh, SVA. Yep.
We both had jobs, city or Brooklyn. Cool. And it wasn't until about 12 or 13 years ago, we moved back to where we kind of grew up on Eastern Long Island. And that's, you know, a little more farm town.
Sure. Yeah. A
little less, city dwellers now. Right. So.
I'm in Brooklyn. That's why I was asking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I worked in Dumbo and
hell yeah.
You know, oh, nice.
I used to live in Bed-Stuy and all that stuff. So,
dope. Andy, lovely. It's that time, buddy.
Oh boy,
it is. It's that time. It is time to remind people that if they like what they're listening to or watching, they could support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/dualscreens. Just like our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler, we can't. Grow. It's impossible to grow without all of your support. So we do appreciate you supporting us on Patreon. As little as $1 gets you some bonus content and gets you into our VIP Discord where you can chat with us, our developer friends, and all that other fun stuff and make friendships that last forever. It's true, Andy. We have friends in there from the very beginning that people are hanging out with each other without us that met through dual screens. It's amazing. You could all do that right now.
Warms the heart and soul.
It warms the cockles of my heart and soul. Mm-hmm. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get into rapid fire. This is where we get to know Chris and Greg a little bit better. We're going to ask you questions. You're going to tell us off the cuff answers to the best of your ability. And then we'll say goodbye and bid you adieu.
Sounds good.
My first question is for Greg. Greg, you're sleeping, middle of the night. The twins are down. They're out cold. Yeah, you finally could sleep. You lay down, and that phone rings. Ring, ring. It is the police department. Chris Burns has been arrested.
Oh, no.
What was his crime?
What have you done, Chris?
Oh, being too awesome.
Oh man!
Oh boy!
Greg is such a sweet guy. He's such a sweet guy. It's drunk in public.
Drunk in public? No, yeah, no, down with that. Yeah.
Well, we gotta change it up, Chris. You get the same phone call. Why was Greg arrested?
Uh oh.
Oh boy. Gosh, he's such a you don't understand how nice Greg is, honestly. I get that. So, but he really is the sweetest guy. You'll never meet anyone sweeter. Gosh.
All right, so I would imagine he unwillingly helped with like a bank robbery, like.
But it was to get money to help an orphanage.
Hey man, could you make this withdrawal from the bank to help the kids in the orphanage? Yeah, absolutely.
He was asked to hold the bag for someone for like an hour. It was filled with cocaine.
Oh man, Chris, this one's for you.
Sure.
Is breakfast cereal a soup?
Yes, because there is a liquid and a solid, and that's sort of the basis of soup in the same way that like technically a hamburger is a sandwich, I guess, too. You know, because
All right. Well, let's not get too philosophical around here, okay? Yeah. it's rapid fire, sit around I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Andy.
If I was to make a Krang out of both of you, one is the brainy alien and one is the giant, strong robot body, who would you both be in that scenario?
Greg has to be the brains. I
was going
to
say, you're going to be the robot body.
No, it's just logistically. I have more mass.
Okay. So you went into the sandwich debate. So now I'm going to give you some sandwich debate.
Okay.
Is a hot dog a sandwich or a taco?
Neither. A hot dog is a hot dog.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I believe in nomenclature.
Okay, he's a purist. I would say it's a sandwich.
I believe in nomenclature, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, yes, yes. Chris, if you were ever caught dead somewhere, where would that be?
Probably at my desk in about 3 months. Is that this Wacom hunched over in between?
Oh, knock on wood. We don't want any of that.
At least make it to the end of this. So,
but are those animations done yet? Yeah, yes, for more.
We need a number two pencil. You keep drawing number 2.5 pencils. All right, that was a good one, Andy. Let's see. Let's get a few more here. Okay. Now this is going to be a twist on our superpowers question that we like to ask our guests. Mm. You have the choice between the power flight and invisibility. Which one of you takes flight, and which one of you takes invisibility?
Mm. Flight come with wings.
Which one?
It could be any way you want to fly.
A Superman or a.
I would take wings. Yeah. If I can get wings, I would take wings.
You legit want
you have
wings?
Invisibility, Chris. Yeah,
I would take invisibility. Sure.
All right.
I just love how he's like, I want to grow actual wings.
I want wings, damn it.
It's like,
yeah, man.
That's, you would have to get a whole new wardrobe. That just seems like
T-shirt
a lot
shopping
of work.
Would be difficult.
You
might
just cut holes in the back of your shirts. You got to buy a whole new shit.
I mean, but it's, I don't know. Andreas.
Greg, if you have a safe word, what is your safe word?
It's not my. I think somebody's word was pineapples. I like pineapples. I think that works.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and unless you bring a pineapple to the bedroom, there's really no reason to say the word pineapple in a bedroom.
Yeah. I mean,
so
yeah, but
I think it works.
That's the whole thing for people. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. That's a good one. Okay, Chris, let's throw one your way. Would you rather take a tour and discover some of the deepest, darkest parts of our ocean, mm-hmm. or a new uncharted area of space?
I think the ocean. I do. I want to see what's down there. It feels more real to me. And my son is super into ocean life too. So mm-hmm. I feel like he probably gets a little bit of that from me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Lovely.
There's got to be something down there, man.
God.
But then, like,
90% of it's undiscovered, right?
The terrifying part is that it's here. Like, it could be a monstrous thing, and it's legit here.
Yeah.
Chris, if you could pick any song to play when Greg walked into a room, which song would that be? And then the same for Greg. So think about it.
Okay. Let's see here. There's this, this is going to be an inside joke, but we have this little thing called a flump song that we play. It's like this 1979, like Canadian,
British,
weird, like Sesame.
Yeah.
Oh, British.
I thought it was British. Yeah.
Like educational thing. And it encapsulates the work.
We're going to need you to hum this song.
Few bars.
FLUMP, and it's like this, just I don't like it. Just
the
a
flumps
kind
theme
of playing
tune.
This bubbly song.
What
you can't room? You can't hum it. You got to mouth trumpet it.
He's doing it. This is exactly how it sounds, by the way.
Oh, I mean,
right? Yeah,
and it's funny because it just reminds me of our team because we found it while we were working, and it makes us laugh every time. So. Yeah.
All right, let's get a couple of more here. See, you've taken away a bunch of questions by saying that Greg is just incredibly nice. So like there's too many obvious answers now with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually we like to pit our guests against each other to see who's more horrible and you know,
not a condiment.
And I think we know the answer no matter what the question at this point.
It's not even a contest.
All right. Pineapple on pizza. Yes or no?
Yeah.
I never had it. I would try it though. I'm not a pizza purist or anything.
Sure, mm-hmm. sure.
Something like that. Sure.
Yeah. Get it with ham too. Pineapple and ham.
Pineapple and ham.
Well, that sounds good.
This might be a fun way to end. A nice fun question for both of you guys.
Okay.
Because you guys, like, you've been through some shit. You both have kids.
You've been through it. This might be a
thing. Let's ask Greg first and Chris same question. What is the dumbest way you've ever injured yourself?
Oh.
There's probably a lot. That's what I was counting on.
No idea.
Oh.
I mean, I tripped over a baby gate real hard in front of my my wife's uncle. I mean, that was not only painful, but it was embarrassing.
Was it one of those moments where like I it's no problem, I don't have to open it, I could walk over this thing, and then your foot gets caught and you just face plant? Yeah, we've all been there, dude.
Yeah,
we've all been
right. Cause you've done it by yourself like 9 million times. You're like, I do this all day, every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as you get an audience, then boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Face down in the carpet. Yeah. Yeah. Anything that's painful and embarrassing, I think, definitely qualifies as work.
Yes.
Totally. Chris, what about you?
What about you, Chris?
When I was 18, I was a carpenter, and we did a lot of roofs and stuff. And I was up in the attic cleaning stuff because the roof was off. So I was cleaning stuff, and I was just walking on the rafters. Kind of just unknowingly, I didn't realize there was just sheetrock in between it.
Oh, so no.
I just stepped in it once. I just fell like right through and like landed. It was this house in the Hamptons, which people don't know, super rich area.
Oh, yeah.
Sheetrock slammed on like a Ferrari or some hugely expensive car. I landed on the Ferrari too. It was so painful. The whole crew was laughing at me. They're like, why did you think you could step on it? It was and I tossed it in my car and embarrassed myself in front of like these real blue collar tough guys. They were embarrassing.
And that's when I knew I was going to draw cartoons.
I'm going to art school.
Cartoons can't hurt me.
If you just stepped on a rake, that would have made the scenario.
that hurt.
All right, gentlemen, it's time for the final question.
Oh boy.
Of Rapid Fire and of the show. Well, kind of. There's like a small question at the end, but whatever. This is the most important question you'll ever be asked in your entire lives. So this is bigger than naming your children. This is bigger than will you marry me? This is top of the heap, top of the list. It's a simple question. A baby can, in fact, answer the question. As a matter of fact, Greg, you have babies in your arms or within your reach, so they could probably answer this for you.
Consult them if you need to.
We're going to need this from the two of you.
Okay.
The question is, Andy or Steve?
Sorry, if I got to pick, gut feel is Andy first. I'm so sorry.
I see. I understand. I understand.
I'm going to pick Steve. It's my father's name.
There you go. Dope. See, we did it. We did it.
Good job, guys.
Good job. There you go. You did it. And amazing. We did it. We got to the end of the show. We did a whole amazing thing. Thank you so much for listening, listeners and viewers. Again, you, of course, this goes on all your podcast service. So if you're watching and you feel like listening in audio form, just slap the Dual Screens podcast in your favorite podcast app. We'll pop up there. And if you're listening and you're like, man, I want to see their handsome faces, you could go to YouTube. youtube.com/dualscreenstv. You want to follow us on social media? We're at @dual_screens on Twitter. I'm at batchild27. Andy is at pantsguy. And you can follow us on Twitch as well. We do some a live podcast every Thursday night called Indies Nuts Podcast, because we're nuts about indies, and so we talk about them. All the news, reviews, and previews over there on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. Gentlemans, where could everybody find you, and where could everybody follow #blood?
Most of our socials are at Exit73 Studios. Twitter is kind of the place where we kind of base everything off of. Though, Greg, something about the Greg kind of runs our TikTok thing, which I'm
not sure.
So and it's amassing quite an audience there. So what, nice. Where can you find them there, Greg?
We'll get those links too.
Exit 73 games on TikTok. But of course, you can wishlist hashtag blood on Steam.
Please do.
Find us on Steam and please wishlist us. Yeah.
Absolutely. I wishlist so hard, so fast.
Mm-hmm. We awesome. Really appreciate Thank you so much. That. Yeah, you know, that you don't understand how much that means to us and how much it helps.
With we know exactly what it does.
It's really
like,
yeah.
That's what we always do. It. We're
so grateful. And, you know, as our first game, it's seeing the response has been really rewarding. So.
Well, when you get closer to launch, we'd love to have you back on, talk about the development leading up to launch and all that fun stuff. Maybe we could do a vertical slice with you guys later on too. A lot of fun opportunities here.
Absolutely, we'd love to show you.
We appreciate you being on. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. And as always, please be excellent to each other. Thank you.